ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் shaivam.org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். த டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் ரெஸ்பான்சிவ்னஸ் அண்ட் டாக் ஆன் மொரிஷியஸ் ட்ரிப், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
So responsiveness is also related to this. In the monastery, the monks try to be responsive to the suggestions they receive from the OTM and from their talavar about how they're living. And in the home, the parents, of course, are giving suggestions to the children until they become adults on how they are living. So sometimes when we get a suggestion, we don't want to do it. Why do I have to do that? That's a rule in living with Shiva. I don't like that rule. Why do I have to do that? You know, we respond in a rebellious way. Some things we don't like for some reason. So, of course, that's not the ideal. The guideline is there for some reason. It's trying to make us a more cultured person. It's part of Hindu culture. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. So there's a reason for it. So if we can overcome any sense of rebelliousness or reluctance when these ideas are expressed to us in the monastery or in the home, that's a good step toward the purpose of the Jivana Ritau, is to make small adjustments in our life, become more cultured in how we express ourselves. Sometimes new students, in encountering living with Shiva, wonder why it's so specific on items like diet. We shall follow an Indian diet, traditional Ayurvedic vegetarian Indian diet, I think is what it says. Why isn't just being vegetarian enough? Has anybody ever asked you that? Or have you ever wondered that? No. Why is it so specific here? I mean, we're not in India. We're in the U.S. What's wrong with an American veggie diet or a Chinese veggie diet? They have lots of interesting dishes. And why did Gurudeva make something so specific? Well, the answer is he wanted to create a global congregation that was homogeneous, that was the same, so that members who were living in Malaysia would come stay with members in the U.S. Lunch would be served. They wouldn't notice a difference. Members here would go over to Malaysia, sit down for lunch, be the same. Go to the shrine rooms, be the same. Trying to create a global oneness, a global shared culture, so that no matter what country you are in, if you were a Shishya, you live the same way, just like we were all living in the same community. So what comes to dress, comes to food, all these small details, that's the reason for it. He wants to help have everyone feel like they're the same. You visit there, they visit here, everyone comes to the temple. It all feels like a one family, a one big group, because we're doing these small things the same way. We're cooking the same foods, wearing the same clothes, doing the same pujas. The house looks the same. That's the idea behind it, to create a oneness. So if anyone ever asks, and you weren't aware of the reason before, or you had other reasons, you can add this to your list of reasons, as to what's the thinking behind this kind of specific guidelines, being so specific, Indian Ayurvedic vegetarian diet, to create this one global family that feels like a family. Have a wonderful Jivana Ritao. We're going to go out and raise the flag and impress our mind that it's a new Ritao. Preparing this morning's talk, I was reminded of something Gurudeva used to do on occasion. Go back far enough. He would be talking to the monks in the morning and be getting awfully fiery and dynamic and wondering, gee, what did we do wrong? You know, I thought everything was okay, and all of a sudden Gurudev is fired up, and then you realize that, oh, tomorrow he's giving a talk to such and such group. And he's actually getting ready to get fired up at them. So you have to not take it personally. Realize that he's just talking to the ethers and not to you personally. So I thought I'd try the same here. But it's not a fiery talk. It's just a very gentle talk. But getting ready for the trip to Asia. It's coming up September 4th, I think it is. So starting to think about the talks that will be given along the way. We're passing through Malaysia on the to and from Mauritius, and then we're also passing through Singapore on the way back. But the trip is primarily for Mauritius. The idea is that most of the members in Mauritius are not able to come here, whereas in Malaysia and Singapore, a lot of the members do come every few years. They come regularly, but so we're feeling a need, particularly with Gurudeva's Mahasamadhi and all, to strengthen our ties with the members in Mauritius. And so we plan to go there at Ganesha Chaturthi time this year as well as in subsequent years. Focus on them. It's a wonderful time for the Mauritius members there with the Panchamukha Ganapati Mandapam in place on Ganesha Chaturthi. I don't know exactly how many people, but it's in the thousands, come to worship Ganesha there at that time every year. So it's a natural time for a public talk and a nice event. It's fitting right into the timing, Ganesha Chaturthi, and Mauritius is a public holiday. That's a nice turn. Maybe someday we'll have a Hindu public holiday in the U.S. That would be nice. Deepavali or something was Gurudeva's vision to be held. Holiday in the U.S. every year. So along the way, we're giving talks. One of the talks which we're giving on the way to Mauritius in Kuala Lumpur at a mission gathering is on Parents as the First Guru. As you know, we printed up that little flyer which has the 9 parenting points. And so you might hear some about that in the next talk or two before we go, warming up for that. And we'll also be giving that talk in Mauritius. And this talk here is designed for a temple in Grand Bay, which is, of course, where Sivakumaran and Kavita live. It's a Shiva temple there. And one of the trustees of the temple, Mr. Paramal, has generously given us his new bungalow. It's on the beach there in Grand Bay. We have 2 rooms in his new bungalow for free for the stay. So we'll be seeing the members not in a hotel, but right there in a private bungalow, which is very nice of him. And he's invited us to speak at the Shiva temple there as well, which Gurudeva visited, and I believe we donated a Koti Maram, I think, to it, to brush up on that before we go. So this talk is a very simple talk about Shiva, trying to address any common misconceptions, because this will just be a gathering of people in the Grand Bay area. It's not designed for our members. It's not a high-powered talk or a sophisticated talk. It's designed to be translated into Creole. And so here goes. There are some who say that Hindus believe in a trinity of gods. Brahma, the creator, Vishnu, the preserver, and Rudra, or Shiva, the destroyer. But of course, this is not true. The truth is that Hindus believe in a one God who performs all three of these functions, creation, preservation, and destruction. And of course, to Hindus of the Saivite denomination, this one supreme being is known as God Shiva. In addition to these three acts of creation, preservation, and destruction, God Shiva also performs two more actions which relate specifically to the soul. The first of these actions is that he hides himself from us. So it's very interesting. You know, though he pervades the entire universe, though he pervades us, he's within us, we can't find him. How is that? He's hidden himself from us. And this, of course, is his action of the veiling grace. We can't see him, even though he's everywhere. So, a simple analogy is, to parents and children, it's as if to a young child, the mother and father are playing hide and seek. They've hidden. And it's the object of the child to find the mother and father. They've hidden themselves from the child. It's a game, just like that. So the second of these two actions is that he eventually shows himself to us. This, of course, is called his revealing grace, and it's like the child successfully finding in the game of hide-and-seek the parents who have hidden themselves. Quite often we're asked, how should we conceive of God Shiva? What's the best way to think about God Shiva? What's God Shiva's nature? The easiest way to understand God Shiva's nature is to think of him as the parent and yourself as the child. As parent, singular, he's both mother and father. Mother and father aren't separate, they're both in God Shiva. Why is God Shiva like the parent? Because he created your soul. We call him the primal or original soul because all other souls were created by him. So he's the parent of everyone, having created their soul. Not only is God Shiva the parent, he's the perfect parent. Because no matter what we do, Shiva always sends his blessings and love to us. When we make mistakes, God Shiva is never upset or angry or displeased with us. He's always the same, always loving and blessing us. No matter what we do, certainly doesn't punish us. He's just there. The perfect parent never gets disturbed, no matter how ridiculous we act. God Shiva's there. The perfect parent, loving and blessing us at all times. We can describe God Shiva's love as perfect love, because it exists at all times and extends to all beings. Nobody gets left out. exists at all times and for all beings, a perfect love. The goal, of course, is to find God, for God to reveal himself to us. But if we keep searching diligently, we will eventually find him. Even though he's hidden from our sight right now, we can perform certain actions that will cause us to eventually find God. And in finding God, we also experience Shiva's perfect love. We experience the consciousness that Shiva is in, which includes perfect love, love for everyone at all times. So how do we find God? How do we experience God as perfect love? Well, we need to become closer to him. And Hinduism gives us certain actions, certain disciplines or sadhanas we can perform that bring us closer to God. A number of those have to do with worshipping at a Shiva temple. Worshipping at a Shiva temple. So we'll look at those. First, worshipping at a temple is called bhakti yoga. And Gurudeva gives us a beautiful definition of bhakti yoga. He says, bhakti yoga is the practice of devotional disciplines, worship, prayer, chanting, and singing, with the aim of awakening love in the heart and opening oneself to God's grace. That's a very nice definition because it shows us a threefold process here. First step, we're doing something. We're performing in these disciplines, worshiping, chanting, attending puja. If we do them successfully, what happens? We open the heart or awaken love toward God Shiva. If we're successful in accomplishing that, the third thing happens, we receive God Shiva's grace or blessings. We feel his perfect love. Some of the ways in which we can increase our devotion for God Shiva as follows. Of course, we've talked about these before here, so they won't be new, but for them they'll be new. One of the easiest ones is we always have to travel to the temple. Unless you're a monk, you don't live in the temple. You have to travel. Sometimes we travel a great distance to the temple. And how we use our travel time, what we're doing during that time relates to the depth of our worship. So if we're gossiping or listening to rock and roll or doing business on the cellular phone or accessing the internet or whatever, we're not preparing ourselves to have as profound an experience at the temple as we can. If we take the time while we're traveling to put ourselves in a devotional mood, if we're driving, we can play some devotional music in the CD player. If we're driving a bicycle, we can sing a Devaram. That helps put us in the right mood so that we can maximize the benefits, the blessings we receive at the temple itself. The next point, which Gurudeva stressed for all 50 years of his ministry, bring an offering. Don't come empty-handed. Usually it's a flower offering, but if flowers are scarce, at least bring a leaf, is what he used to say. No reason in the world you can't at least bring a leaf as an offering when you come to the temple. So don't come empty-handed. Bring something. Ideally, you can bring an offering that you've spent time preparing, like sewing a garland is a traditional one, something where you put time and prana as well. You put your energy, your life force, into the offering. When you make a garland of flowers, you're handling the flowers, you're touching them, you're putting your life force in them, as well as thinking about the deity you're giving it to. But you're putting your energy into it. Later on, when that garland is placed upon the deity, your energy is in the garland, and the garland is touching the deity, so therefore it's the same as if you were touching the deity, reaching up with your hand and touching the murti. It's the same effect. You've created a psychic closeness with the deity through putting your prana into the garland which is placed upon the deity. So that helps create a closeness, much more than just bringing a single flower and offering it. It's also important to pay attention when you're attending a puja or other temple ceremony. Not just let the mind wander all over the place. Sometimes this is challenging because all the chanting is in a language, or even the singing can be in a language that you don't understand. So it's hard to focus on what's going on. But it's important. So you need to figure out a way that you can do that. So for example, if the puja is going on, at least remain aware of the different actions. Oh, incense is being offered. Now we're offering the flame. Now we're offering flowers. Now we're chanting the names. At least keep track of the basic actions that are going on in the puja. Don't just let your mind wander. And if you're singing devotional songs in a language you don't understand, make sure you find out the meaning. It doesn't do much good to sing something and not have any idea what it means. And then even though you've looked up the meaning, after a few years you might forget it. You just get in the habit of singing it without remembering what it means. So it's good to refresh your memory every once in a while, every few years at least, on devotional songs that you don't understand that well, and at least have a general sense. What are we singing about here? What is this about? Another way of getting close to the deity through temple worship is taking advantage of the fact that all days aren't the same. All days are not equally auspicious for worship. So festival days, for example, the major festival days are the most auspicious for worship. So Mahashivaratri, for example, is a very auspicious day for Shiva worship. The energy we put into worshiping on Mahashivaratri brings better results than on other days. And there are monthly days that are more auspicious than other days. And different temples have different traditions, so it's not the same in every temple. But keeping in mind the auspiciousness of the day, and on days that are more auspicious, putting more energy into your worship, more time at the temple, is a good way of increasing our closeness to the deity. So in closing, we have three little phrases to remember. The first one is traditional from scripture. Of course, it's Avayar. Do not live in a village that is without a temple. We all know that one, right? Meaning we want to be able to go to a temple every week. So we have two more to add to that. Do not go to a temple without an offering. It's a simple one to remember. And the third and last one, do not attend a puja without attentiveness. Now we've got three simple little guidelines to remember. Om Namah Shivaya. So now we can bring our minds back from Mauritius, where we were, right down near the ocean there in Grand Bay. You can hear it in Creole. It'll be translated into Creole. That's one reason it needs to be simple. It's got to come across in Creole language. So as we talked about last phase, we're in the Jivana Ratau. And Gurudeva's Ratau, and he'd pull out Living with Shiva and find a few sutras and start scolding everyone. Of course, we're not going to do that this year, but that's the spirit of the Ratau, is to try and look and see if there's areas that we're weak in, areas where we've slacked off in terms of living with Shiva. And you'll have to scold yourself this year. But if you can find any areas, then it's appropriate to try and upgrade, just do a little better. And fits into the yama and niyama concept. Yamas and niyamas, the talks we gave a number of months ago are now getting posted on the web in transcription form. So we're starting to get some emails in from those who don't listen to the talks but who read them. They're very appreciative emails on yamas and niyamas. And one statement that came in struck me. They liked the idea, which of course is the way Gurudeva states it, that the yamas and niyamas are ideals we're striving for. And if we fall short, that's all right. The person liked that because they know they've fallen short. You know, said, "Oh, okay, it's all right to fall short. Well, I feel better about myself already." That was kind of the message that was being said without being said. You know, oh, this is great to read this, and because we don't want to get stuck in the concept we've fallen short. This is terrible. I'm an unworthy person, or everybody else is better than me, or something, and that's missing the point. If we fall short, we want to try again and try to do better. That's the ideal of the yamas and niyamas. It's the ideal. We keep trying to do better in manifesting the ideal. But if and when we do fall short of the ideal, we don't want to blame ourselves or feel badly about what's happened. We want to impress ourselves that we have fallen short, try and figure out how not to repeat that and how to do a little better in manifesting each of the yamas and niyamas. Have a wonderful faith. We're off to Asia in a few days. This is our phase to prepare and then depart for Asia. So we're looking forward to going there, particularly in Mauritius. Very few of the members, students, and devotees there ever come to Kwai Adinam, so it's a wonderful opportunity to see them all again. And of course, everyone in Malaysia and Singapore as well. So I thought I'd share this morning some of the messages we're taking with us on our trip. Main message is parents are the first guru. And that ties in, of course, to the positive discipline that we've been emphasizing for a number of years, and the nine qualities to cultivate in children. That whole area of the nine qualities comes out of positive discipline. In other words, positive discipline has to be in place first, even to talk about these other areas. So these are like refinements or extensions of what can be done in a home where positive discipline is in use. So I was preparing this talk yesterday, and always the first thing I do when I prepare a talk is I look at Gurudeva's daily lesson, see what's there, and because it's amazing that the timing of the daily lesson and the events in life quite often coincide in a very interesting way. So, of course, What would the sutra of the day be on? Positive discipline. Main message in the trip. So, just to read that sutra. Siva's followers direct children through affirmations, meaningful chores, and rules that are clear and understood, teaching that mistakes are opportunities to learn, and focusing on solutions instead of punishment. So what stood out to me in reading that, I've read that many times, is the word rules. I recently read your article, Tara, on the schooling experience, and what stood out to me was the need to establish clear rules. You know, that was really fundamental to anything working right in the classroom. The rules needed to be understood, and the consequences of breaking the rules needed to be understood, and of course those consequences had to be reasonable. Couldn't be outlandish. So having a system like that in place is totally necessary in order for a situation to use positive discipline. So anyway, I was impressed with the idea of rules. So we're taking this talk on the 9 guidelines. Going to give it in all 3 countries. It's our one dominant speech. We're going to even give it on television in Mauritius. They've arranged the television interview, so we'll get positive discipline. And parents is the first guru out there in television on Mauritius. So the 9 guidelines, just to read them, so we all have them in mind. Brown ink on brown paper in half light. Okay. So they all begin with a P. Remember that? Begin with a P. The first word begins with a P, and either the last word or the second to last word begins with a C. So it makes it easy to remember. Positive self-concept. Perceptive self-correction. Powerful self-control. Profound self-confidence. Playful self-contentment. Pious character. Proficiency in conflict resolution. Parental closeness. And prejudice-free consciousness. Those are 9 qualities. Certainly the largest gathering on the trip will be the gathering in Mauritius at the spiritual park the day after Ganesha Chaturthi. For some reason, the public holiday is the day after Ganesha Chaturthi. Don't know why. But anyway, we're having a large event on that day, September, I think it's 11th. And should have well over 1,000 people in attendance. It's famous for generating lots of attendance that day. It's being publicized and have some government VIPs there as well, we hope. So we're working on a simple message for that situation. The 9 parenting beliefs is too complicated, 9 parenting guidelines. So working on one on Lord Ganesha and how the worship of Lord Ganesha helps us control our emotional nature, control the negative emotional states. So this was written up in the newsletter, just like the Yeravan Building Fund has a newsletter here, which we all see. In Mauritius, they have a newsletter for the spiritual park. It doesn't come out monthly. It comes out every 3 months. And so in addition to the news and the lists of contributors and activities coming up, there's a message from me that goes in it. And so this is one of what went out in the last one. The worship of Lord Ganesha brings many benefits to those whose devotion is deep and who have learned to feel close to him. You may be wondering what it means to feel close to Ganesha. It means he is a good friend with whom you share your life, its successes and shortcomings, joys and sorrows. He is to you a real being who simply happens to not have a physical body. One of the benefits he bestows is to stabilize our emotional nature. His blessings can keep us from falling into the negative states of mind, such as fear, depression, insecurity, and anger. Ganesha's blessings keep our consciousness in the positive states of mind in the Muladhara chakra and above. Truly, the spiritual park is an auspicious place for the worship of Lord Ganesha due to Satguru Savaya Subramanya Swami's powerful vision of Ganesha bathing in the Rempa River. Chai Panchamukha Ganapati. So that will be the basis for that talk. And it's interesting. Human nature is consistent throughout the world. We all have the same problems. We all have the same experiences, joys and sorrows, ups and downs. So I wrote this message about, I guess, 3 weeks ago, and I've had to find it 3 additional times to send it out on email. People write in and say, help, help, I'm having trouble with this, I'm having trouble with that. And what can I do? So if it's something to do with emotional control, then I've been pulling out this message because it's just very good general advice. You know, if you're having trouble with your emotions, going up and down, joy and sorrow, depression, anger, resentment, feeling upset about this and that, resentful, whatever, angry. The worship of Lord Ganesha is a very good solution, but you have to feel close to him. You have to have made him a friend. Otherwise, it doesn't work. We have another message, which we're going to work into that same event. It's one we gave a while ago, a number of months ago. It's on satsang. Participating in satsang, a gathering of good souls on a regular basis, is very stabilizing to our religious life. We are influenced more than we realize by those we associate with at work and elsewhere. At work, at school, and elsewhere. As Guru Vallabhar says in the Koral, as water changes according to the soil through which it flows, so a man assimilates the character of his associates. Another verse, even perfect men possessing the mind's full goodness are fortified by pious fellowship. When an individual seeks guidance for the problem of not living up to the spiritual principles previously upheld, which happens every few months, get an email in, somebody says, I stopped my sadhana, this and that, or I haven't been doing sadhana for years, what should I do? So it's that case. When an individual seeks guidance for the problem of not living up to the spiritual principles previously upheld, the advice given is to attend a satsang regularly, as that will help catalyze one to resume one's spiritual practices. In other words, you have to associate with people who are doing spiritual practices in order to sustain it if you've stopped. If you're going along fine, maybe you can do it on your own, but if you stopped, you won't be able to start up again, usually, unless you associate regularly with other people who are doing it. That gives you enough critical mass, so to speak, gives you enough momentum to restart your practices. Thus, it is particularly inspiring to see the first Sunday of the month public worship of Lord Ganesha at the spiritual park gaining momentum. Chai Panchamukha Ganapati. So that the members there, particularly the Kulapati, have been very inspired about having this first Sunday of the month special. So on the first Sunday of the month, the members do a homa by themselves. They do a simple homa, and the public comes, and they do bhajan and give a talk in Creole. And it's building up nice attendance. Some people are very appreciative, and they say, get comments like, gee, it's so nice to come and worship where the people worshiping are religious. Those doing the homa are doing it in a very devotional way. They're not used to seeing that. So that's a good testimony as to the sincerity of the members there in their worship.